from Hamilton for a couple of different reasons. This is going to be a theater hour for you. We're going to talk about remembering the Alamo with the neo-futurists coming up, and we are going to talk a little million-dollar quartet from the Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. But first, Miguel Cervantes asked a question during tonight's debate with Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle about the theater community in Chicago, which is so strong. And Hamilton has really struck a chord with our nation's students because it embodies what great history education is all about, bringing the past to life and fostering connections with the exceptional individuals and moments that have made us who we are. So we want to introduce you to the Hamilton Education Program and a remarkable woman. The music you're hearing is, of course, from Hamilton, and I'm so excited to have on the air with us Lois McMillan. She is the Hamilton Education Program Senior Education Fellow. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. I like the word senior. Since I'm approaching the age of 60, I'm going to be 60 soon, and been a classroom teacher for 30 years, so senior is a good word.
We're so excited. Do you know how much Chicago loves Hamilton? I just have to ask you that first, Lois.
Well, absolutely. I mean, when we're going into the city, we travel around to the different tour cities and have Title I high schools come to the matinee after the kids have done student performances. And the student performances in Chicago just blow us away every single time. So absolutely, you know, Chicago's in love with Hamilton.
The Hamilton Education Program is one of several history education programs at the Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History. Now, your president, James Basker, devised the education program in New York in tandem with Lin-Manuel Miranda's producer, Jeffrey Seller, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the New York Department of Education. The project has been called transformative, Lois, so tell us about it.
Well, the brainchild, there's a great deal with James Basker has been part of it, but we have a senior education person named Sasha Roland Pereira, and she's really the one that had the New York thing going with Tim, our senior educator, too. But it's Sasha's vision that she saw Hamilton within the classrooms of New York, and then we expanded it through all the tour cities. So, the idea was is that we saw that Hamilton was transformative already in the classroom. For the minute it was at the, before it was on Broadway, I was teaching it in the classroom even then. And from then, we saw a great deal of expansion in electricity that kids are walking in and they want to know history now. And it's not just about the old white guys anymore. They really saw a whole nother angle. Lin-Manuel Miranda brought us kids excited and hip-hop history ready to learn about the founding era in American history.
What I found so amazing, Lois, is that I learned so much about Hamilton when I went things I didn't even know about Alexander Hamilton and the founding fathers. So it makes perfect sense to bring this to students, especially students in Chicago. Chicago is one of the touring cities.
Right. And not only that, you know, if you just go to the play and you learn a whole bunch more about Hamilton and Jefferson and what was happening in the founding era, but you also, if the students do the curriculum, and that's what they do, and they create performance pieces, they also learn of other founding era giants that they had never heard of. And many of them were African Americans that wanted to have the abolition of slavery even at the beginning of the founding era and at the Constitutional Convention. And great poets like Phyllis Wheatley, we've seen a lot of performances on her. So it's not just the people in the founding era like Jefferson and Hamilton and Washington. We're seeing also an expansion from that, the other great literary figures in American history during the founding era.
What's really great about this program, too, it empowers students to kind of reclaim their own narrative and empowers teachers to bridge classroom learning with the stage.
Well, and from a classroom standpoint, you're seeing kids that would not appear in the classroom to really flower, and they are blossoming. The shy kid is the one getting on and just killing a rap, or the other kid that just has poetry inside of them, and they get up and they perform it. So we're seeing just an explosion of talent within the classroom that we wouldn't regularly see.
I had the opportunity to attend one of the events from the Hamilton Education Program the year before. I found it so interesting. The students were so passionate and just became very, they were so emotional. You know, it brought tears to some of the students' eyes that they were able to get on the stage and interact with the actors and bring their own form of prose and poetry to Broadway in Chicago and to our stages here in the Windy City.
Well, and what's fun about going even to every city, not just Chicago, but to every city we go to, the kids are so into the play. They're not like the theater-going, theater-going person. They are into it. They know all the lines. And when their fellow students get up, they have such respect and give them such support when they get up. So it is a wonderful marriage of shifting goodness to the people that are on the stage, and they're receiving all the love from their fellow students.
It has to make you feel really good from your experience in the Hamilton Education Program. It has to make you feel so good that you're kind of passing this on to the next generation after yours and mine.
Yeah, our generation, I was a child of the 70s, but my generation had nothing like this. I mean, I think we had Camelot. And of course, Lin-Manuel Miranda was a huge fan of Camelot. That's where he got the ideas. So, he was a Broadway kid, and, a lot of us might have seen it, but Jim Basker calls him the Shakespeare of our time. He has really opened up an ability to teach children differently in the classroom. I can't say enough about how great it is.
And I'm told, that I'm speaking to a Grammy winner as well.
Yeah.
Well, tell me.
I don't have any musical talent, but what I do is make sure that I foster it within all my students, and that's what I got it for. I got a Grammy. It's called the Jane Ortner Award. It's the nationally recognized Teacher of the Year that brings music in the classroom that is a non-music classroom. And I teach American history, so I've been using music in the classroom for a long time. But I really particularly got it for the historical raps that my kids did. And, you know, you're from Chicago. Last year, my kids did the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
In rap with Stephen Douglas, the other great Douglas, or the second great Douglas. The first great Douglas in my mind is Frederick Douglass.
But yes.
Douglas and Lincoln. And my kids learned and read all the speeches from the seven places that they went around in Illinois. And they learned the geography. Oregon kids learned the geography of Illinois pretty quickly through the debates.
I love it. And that's huge for us here in Illinois, the Lincoln-Douglas debates, and of course, Lincoln, our state founding father.
I'm a huge Lincoln person, so that's where my scholarship really always extends, that and Frederick Douglass. So those are my two big ones. And I think kids think that I'm Hamilton. Hamilton has been my historical boyfriend for a long time. But I saw a long time ago, like in 2004, 2005, that he just wasn't written in the textbooks at all. I mean, the only thing they did is have a picture of him with the Secretary of Treasury as the Secretary of Treasury. Nobody knew anything about him. And then a couple of books came out, one of them being Ron Chernow's Hamilton. And I said, this is a way to get it in the classroom. So when I'd introduce the founding era, I would say, oh, I've got a boyfriend. His name's Alexander Hamilton. And they go, oh, my goodness, you know, he's dead. And I go, you know, those dead boyfriends seem to behave better.
That's so, right. They don't talk back to you.
They don't. But, you know, and then they find out that he did cheat on his wife. And then they say, you know, what do you think about that, Miss Mack? And I go, well, you know, people are human. That's right. That was really a way to bring humanity to Hamilton. But Hamilton was a genius. There's no doubt about it, just like Lin-Manuel Miranda is. But, you know, he was the man who invented modern America. He deserves a Broadway show.
I would love to see Lincoln on stage.
Oh,
maybe that could be your next project.
Well, no, there was a wonderful play on in London, and it ran for 40 years straight on Lincoln. And they bungled Lincoln's biography up pretty good. So most people think the second inaugural of Lincoln and the Gettysburg Address is one speech, according to that play. So
It's
pretty historically inaccurate. But, boy, they do have a Lincoln, and it could come to Broadway, but it would be slammed for being historically inaccurate.
Well, I tell you, I would still love to see it. Maybe a few years down the road after a few more Grammy wins.
Oh, it's fun to see. I've read the script, and it's just hysterical.
Oh,
that's just wonderful.
That is great. So, where do you keep the Grammy? I have to ask this.
I do on my my fireplace right there at the top, below a statue, a Greek statue. So,
oh, fantastic. Founding father of Greece, so, founding father of America. Well, so it works out well.
I'll tell you.
Lois, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. Please, and tell us you'll continue with the Hamilton Education Program, and keep bringing this program to Chicago so students here can learn from it and they can see Hamilton on the stage and keep creating their own passion.
Well, we'll be there in May again, and we'll be bringing around 42 schools. So we're really excited about bringing Hamilton back to Chicago, and we'll see the kids just blow us out of the water again.
You bet. Lois, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, and have a great evening.
You too. That's Lois McMillan, the Senior Education Fellow from the Hamilton Education Program, and we didn't miss our shot. How about that, Lois?
Good.
Have a great night.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. 924 720 WGN. I love when the Neo Futurists are in studio with us. There's a production playing now through April 27th at the Neo Futurist Theater. It is called Remember the Alamo. And we have the creator of Remember the Alamo and one of the cast members as well. Nick Hart and Kurt Chang are here. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Thank you for being here tonight.
You're welcome.
All right.
Absolutely.
I love when the Neo Futurists are here. It's one of my favorite theaters. And I want you to tell everybody about Remember the Alamo.
Absolutely. So the first thing is that I'm not in the cast. I directed it.
I know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. I thought you were saying that I was one of the cast members.
And you're not. You're the director.
Yeah.
That's like the
awesome.
Most important
cool. awesome.
Part. You know that's the most important part, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the writer, too.
Yeah.
Writer, creator.
Cool. So Remember the Alamo is Nick's premier primetime show at the Neo Futurists.
Mm-hmm.
It is a show where Nick has taken the Battle of the Alamo and he's brought it into the theater, into the Neo Futurarium, and exploded it in a way and brought all the cast, all the historical figures of that time of that event, like Davy Crockett and James Bowie and mm-hmm. William B. Travis, and he's telling his own personal narrative, personal stories through this historical event that is known in America and not much of anywhere else.
Well, yeah, and maybe not even known to a newer generation. You're kind of exposing this to now. Why the Alamo? Why this particular event in our history?
Well, I grew up in Texas, so growing up in Texas, the story is kind of forced upon you since you're a fetus. So it's a story that's always been with me and fascinated me and taught to me over and over again, and it's always stayed with me. And
yeah.
So I wanted to explore its origins along with my own.
Is there some humor in this too, or is this just straightforward history? This is what you're going to be hearing, which ties in well with Hamilton, our first part of the show.
I think there might be some humor in it.
There's an extraordinary amount of humor, Nick. There's an extraordinary amount of humor. There's like, it's a lot of it is actually is improvised and very spontaneous at the moment of mm-hmm. the performance. The cast is made up of five different performers. The audience, when they come to see it, sees like various scenes throughout that are, there's a lot of like reenacting, like, or reimagining what Davy Crockett's life might have been like hunting in the woods for bears, or what brought certain characters to the Alamo.
What did bring them there? I mean, don't give too much away, but what did
sure.
bring, and I've been to the Alamo, I've been to San Antonio, I think the Alamo is very cool, but what brought the settlers there?
I think it's an American story where expats came to a new land and wanted that land, and they fought for it. I think that's a loose blanket statement, but also
it's not
true.
A very big parcel of land.
At the time, it was a huge parcel of land,
and now it's not. Now it's very small.
Yeah, it's just a tiny little fort.
What happened to it? What happened to all the land?
Well, in the Battle of the Alamo, the entire fort was destroyed, and they were all massacred, and all that's left is a small facade of a church.
And we have fun with that.
And we
I
love
bet,
it.
Yeah. And how do you, well, I was going to say, how do you make that fun? But I'm sure there's, you know, creative ways of doing that.
Well, I think we're pretty irreverent with it. Like, the point of the show isn't necessarily to tell, like, to give, like, a really in-depth history lesson of what happened. Nick is using it as kind of like a playground to sort of talk about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. His your own family life.
So it's a little autobiographical.
Everything we do at the Neo Futurist is primarily autobiographical, and we write from like our own stories and our own life. Yeah.
I think it makes it much more human, too. We're talking to Kurt Chang and Nick Hart with the Neo Futurist new Remember the Alamo. It's now playing through April 27th. We'll have more with the guys and more about the theater and the play after this on 720 WGN. I promise you this would be a theater hour, and it is indeed. Vivian Lanou, thank you so much for all your help tonight. Our new producer, we love you very much.
And I love you guys.
Happy Greek Independence Day.
That's right, Opa.
Zito alas. We were at the Daily Center today for a little ceremony going on there. We could see the beautiful Greek flag flying next to the Chicago flag and the American flag. So thank you as always, Vivian.
Thank you.
As I promised you, it was going to be a theater hour. In studio, I have Tommy Maloff and Zach Sorrow. They are the stars of Million Dollar Quartet Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. If you haven't seen this production and this performance, you have to see it. You just have until March 31st. Tickets are still available for the last week of Million Dollar Quartet. It's theateratthecenter.com. Tommy and Zach, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And you played Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley.
That's right.
All right, you're going to be playing for us, too, to round out the show. A couple of songs. But I want to ask you guys, this is such a popular and amazing performance. What do you attribute the success of Million Dollar Quartet to all over the years? Whether someone's seeing it for the first time or for the 10th time, because I've seen it twice.
I think in simplest terms, the music just never gets old. It was so transformative in rock and music history. The songs are still so good. It's just, you know, these guys are, you know, for us to be able to play them, it's just fun being in the room. You know, the show, it doesn't feel like a lot of other music, like musicals. It feels like we're just four dudes who are just playing their music and loving having a great time in the same space.
What is it like playing rock legends? I mean, you are playing Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash. What is that like?
Do you want to take that?
Yeah. Here, lean on into that.
Yeah. So it's a little intimidating, like just at first glance, because they are so iconic and they're so, you know, there's almost an expectation, at least initially as an actor, like you kind of go into it like, oh, like I gotta, these are big shoes to fill. But then, especially when you approach it the way our director, Daryl Brooks, had told us to look at it, just like they're people.
Yeah.
These are people like hanging out and they were friends and they were kids. Like looking at it kind of at this lens, like this Million Dollar Quartet takes place when they're all like, basically, like 24 or under.
Yeah.
Johnny's what, 24? Elvis is 21. Yeah. I think Jerry Lee Lewis is still 19 when the show takes place.
And is it based on a true story where one night where they all are coming together, they're all in the same recording studio?
It was
the coincidence of a day where the four of them happened to be in the Sun studio at the same time.
And all the fates were aligned.
Really, though. And, you know, Sam Phillips, who was their, you know, producer, the guy who, you know, ran Sun Studios at the time, it was just like, let's roll the tape. And you guys just do what you do. All four of you are here, so we're just going to record. And they just played together. And so the show is a sort of dramatic retelling of this actual day that took place where these legends were all together in the same room at the same time. And it never happened again.
No, I was going to say, and that didn't really happen back in the day. I know now we have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony and bands reunite or groups come together. And, of course, you know, different artists collaborate. But For this particular time, to get four legends in the same recording studio, in the same room at the same time. That was kind of unheard of.
Yeah, and there's a lot of touring. I mean, they would ride together, and especially like as they began getting their like getting on their feet and getting out there, there'd be a lot of touring together. Like Carl and Johnny would be on a show together,
or what have you.
And before Elvis really kind of like took off, I mean, the Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley, they toured together. Like this, you know, these were guys who knew each other. Like they knew and played together all the time, but their careers had, you know, kind of taken off in their individual directions. And so this sort of completely spontaneous happenstance meeting of these rock stars all at the same time, like that kind of thing doesn't really happen, where it's like, oh, hey, didn't think you would be here. Yeah. Let's you know, make, you know, rock history together today.
Yeah, yeah.
For no reason.
Right. You're going into The Voice. I hear it already.
Oh, well, I often can't help it now.
I hear it already. Yeah. Why don't you guys play for us? It's Tommy Maloff, who plays Johnny Cash, and Zach Sorrow, who plays Elvis Presley. It's Million Dollar Quartet at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day is through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you. Because you're mine, I walk the line. As sure as night is dark and day is light, I keep you on my mind both day and night. And happiness I've known proves that it's right. Because you're mine, I walk the line. You've got a way to keep me on your side. You give me cause for love that I can't hide. For you, I know I'd even try to turn the tide. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Take it away, John.
Thanks, Al. I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
That's Tommy Maloff, it's Johnny Cash, and Zach Sorrow, Elvis Presley. I have to ask, okay, the voice, were you always a Johnny Cash fan, or did you play him and think, okay, this is the role of a lifetime for me?
Oh, man.
No, because, you know, because your voice, you got the voice down just beautifully, and it's such a low, you know, it's
isn't
such
it
a
great?
Low chord, an alto, a true alto.
Over there.
Yeah.
I thought I'd appreciate all right,
so,
as much.
Truth.
Truth, I was not a big Johnny Cash fan growing up. I hated him, actually. And I grew up with a diehard love of 60s music, mostly like British Invasion, Beatles, like Monkees. Like, my dad totally got me into that music scene. So, I mean, I had a love for Elvis because obviously he was the king, but like the whole rockabilly kind of country thing wasn't my jam. And it wasn't until I auditioned for another Johnny Cash show, assuming that I wasn't even going to play Johnny. I assumed like I'd be someone else in the band. And they're like, well, we're going to be going for this. And so, like, after having done it and delved a little bit into it, that's when I, you know, I got to experience a little bit more of his canon. And, you know, the audience response helped. Making people happy didn't hurt.
Oh, man. Well, you nail the sound, because I was kind of like, my grandma used to listen to Johnny Cash with her 8-track, and I never really liked it.
Yeah.
Then I saw Walk the Line and just fell in love. And one of my best friends has her ringtone as Walk the Line still to this day. So and
that was really the thing, too. I think once really delving into his story, I think there was a little bit of an aversion to, like, just the initially to his dark side, but then, like, it wasn't really until going into research to finding out about his relationships with Elvis, with Carl.
Johnny Cash, you know, all these guys were, but, you know, they each had such an important role to play in the history of rock music, and pop music.
Of music in general, Zach, were you an Elvis fan? You play Elvis. Did you like the music? Did you think this is the role of a lifetime? Or were you kind of, like, along the Tommy lines of you had to learn to like Johnny Cash?
Sort of. I mean, I've never appreciated Elvis to the extent that I did once I started to, you know, play and try to understand him. Yeah, and actually, Tommy and I were both involved in a production last year called Heartbreak Hotel.
Okay,
And I actually understudied the role of Elvis. So I had a little, I actually had a chance to play the, you know, put on the proverbial blue suede shoes,
nice.
You know, once before this production. So it was really, really cool to get to, like, really dive in, really go, like all the way into figuring out, like, who Elvis was, who was he at 21. I love it. I love all his music. It's, you know, those early years of the real, like, Sun Records experimentation where Elvis and, you know, Scotty Moore and Bill Black on bass, like, they were pioneers as far as, like, new music is concerned. So those records where they didn't really know what the heck they were doing, and they came out with gold.
Both had such long careers, too. I know Elvis died at a younger age, but they both had to reinvent themselves throughout their careers, too, with the changing times and the different sounds.
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, the most interesting thing to me about Elvis is that he was the first person to ever be that famous that quickly. You know, like,
and spanning generations, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, at 19, I mean, I think about who I was and how I knew myself when I was 19.
Right.
And I didn't know anything. I knew nothing about myself in the world. And so I can't imagine what it was like to be Elvis's age at 19 in the world that, you know, he grew up in, and to be thrown into the spotlight in that way. I mean, the way that his life ended was very sad, but it came in with so many incredible twists and turns that you know, nobody could have ever seen coming, you know, before it happened.
It's amazing. And you guys are wonderful. Will you play another song for us?
All right.
Of course.
All right.
Do you need a break, or can you start?
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Talking about pros here. It's Tommy Mail of his Johnny Cash and Zach Sarro as Elvis Presley. It's Million Dollar Quartet Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. Again, one more week. It closes Sunday, so get your tickets. TheaterAtTheCenter.com. Take it away, guys.
Well, you know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, well, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Baby, if I made you mad, it was something I might have said. Please, let's forget the past, and the future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. I don't want no other love, baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Well, don't you stop thinking of me, don't you make me feel this way. Come on over here and love me. Well, you know what I want you to say. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby, cross my heart. Well, let's walk up to the preacher and let us say I do. Come on, baby. Oh, then you'll know you'll have me, and I'll know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, babe, across my heart. Don't be cruel, ooh, to a heart that's true. Don't be cruel, ooh, to a heart that's true. Come on now. Well, I don't want no other love. Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of.
Woo! Tommy Mal, it was Johnny Cash. That was Zach Sauer, you heard, as Elvis Presley. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. The theater has generously donated three pairs of tickets. So if you want to give us, if you want to see the show, these guys are awesome. Someone's texting in. They said they saw the performance when it first came out. You guys are a knockout. And that's in all caps from the 773. And they said Ms. Williams was also a knockout, too.
Yes.
So congratulations to you. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And good luck in the rest of the run.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Again, it's theateratthecenter.com. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. If you would like a pair of tickets, three callers, one, two, and three, to go see the show. Patty Vasquez coming up next. You guys, thank you so much. More after this on WGN. Patty Vasquez is in studio. What's going on, Patty?
My crosstalk is I want to make sure that the guys from Million Dollar Quartet have a chance to do a shout out to the rest of their castmates.
Yes.
Go ahead, you guys.
Well,
just wanted to say it is one of the greatest pleasures of my young professional life to work with Zach Stevenson and Mike Kurowski and Ariel Williams. They are just fabulously talented and
phenomenal players, amazing players.
So talented. We're not in the room with them right now, but God, it is a pleasure to be on stage with them every night.
Is that the knockout?
Oh, yeah.
In all caps?
Oh, yes.
Ms. Williams? Okay.
She's the most fantastic Diane you're ever going to see.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much.
I couldn't let them leave. They were outside.
I'm glad you did. Because we watched, okay, so the backstory of the hosts, we watch the clock, and then we get yelled at if we're late. You don't want to be late for news, but I'm guilty of it. And
I gave them my crosstalk, and you guys were wonderful, and I wasn't going to let you leave like that, because they were like, you know what, we forgot.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you, Patty.
You guys tune in for after the news for what's coming up on my show. You guys have a great night. That was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patty.
Andrea, great show.
Thanks. Have a great show.